Stand by for the Terry Saul Show. 5, roll tape. 4, cue Terry. 3, bring audio up. 2, stand by. 1, play intro.
Stay tuned for The Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM and 1220 AM, KSLM. Today's show is being brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler. The next time you plan an event, think of the Queen. And by the Lule Group, featuring Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Home, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance.
Well, good morning and welcome to The Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, KSLM AM and FM. I am your host and I'm so glad that you joined us this morning. Our special guest, I'm going to mess up your name because I do it every time. It's Shaney. Did I get it right? Shaney Starr?
You did. Way to go.
Did I get that right? I've been practicing, Shaney.
You've done a great job.
All right. Shaney Starr, you're from CASA. Is it CASA?
CASA of Marion County. Yes.
All right. Before we get into what CASA is, tell me a little bit about you, your background.
So my background, I've spent a couple of decades in nonprofit management in a variety of different roles, and I have a degree in business administration and a master's in management and organizational leadership.
What is CASA?
So CASA stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocates.
What is that?
So we are an organization, a nonprofit organization that trains community members in Marion County to serve as a voice for children who are navigating the dependency court system here in Marion County. In essence, we train volunteers to advocate for kiddos who are in foster care due to abuse and neglect. Our organization and our function actually is mandated by Oregon State Statute ORS 419B.112, where the statute states that in every case, the court shall appoint a court-appointed special advocate. And the statute also deems us as volunteers and as an organization to be a legal party to those cases.
Okay, so I'm a little bit confused with this. Do you train foster parents?
We train community members. Foster parents are trained by the Department of Human Services to really be a place for the children to go while they're in foster care. We train volunteers to help navigate the complexities of the juvenile court system and advocate for what's in the best interest of the child.
Okay, so what is a CASA volunteer and what are they going
to
do?
So our CASA volunteers are a legal party to every child's case. And what that does is that allows them to have access to all of the information and records that are connected to that child's juvenile dependency case while they're in the foster care system. That could be everything from educational records, therapy records. It gives the CASA the ability to talk to anyone that's involved in the child's life, take all of that information that they've gathered through records, through interviews, through observations, through face-to-face conversations with the child. They compile all of that information into a court report, and they report what they think is in the best interest back directly to the judge in a court hearing.
For what purpose?
Ensuring that the best interests of the child are met. So for example, you might have an 8-year-old child who has been removed from the home, maybe due to substance abuse issues by the parents, and maybe, let's say, some domestic violence. So the kiddo, as it should be, may be wanting to go back home, but maybe it's just not quite safe enough and really not safe enough at all for the child to go back home. So the advocate can advocate to the court for what's in the best interest of the child. And the reason that the CASA is so important is because the child has their own attorney who, by ethical requirements, must argue for what the child wants. And then obviously the parents are going to have their own attorney who are arguing for what they want. The CASA advocates for what is in the best interest of the child. So the CASA might say it's not in their best interest right now to go home, but we would like to see mom and dad take some additional parenting classes, have some additional time going through addiction treatment, or maybe take some anger management classes, and then we can reevaluate if it's appropriate for the child to go home.
How does the CASA volunteer know whether it's time for this little Johnny or Judy to go home or not?
That's where they read through all of the records that are assembled, and that's called discovery. So that could be information on treatment or parenting classes, on how the parents are doing. They can read through and are required to read through all of the records and updates and such on how the kiddo's doing. And then they meet and are required to see their kiddo a minimum of every 30 days face to face and have conversations with the kiddo. They have conversations maybe with the family members, foster parents, teachers, and they draw conclusions in partnership with our staff on what's in the best interest of the child.
Is that all they would meet, was just once every 30 days?
That's the minimum requirement, to see the child every 30 days
face to face. And is it a supervised visitation?
No, the CASA can see the kiddo, go visit the kiddo at school. They can maybe meet them, arrange a time to meet them at, you know, go get an ice cream cone or...
Now we're talking,
yeah. So they have a lot of latitude in how they see the kiddo. And many of our volunteers see their kids more often than once every 30 days. They often will talk to them on the phone, you know, just really establish those consistent relationships.
How many volunteers do you have?
We're at about 150 right now.
Serious?
So, yes. Yeah. We need about another 50.
How many children does each volunteer take care of?
On average, 2 to 3. That's kind of our average case size, 2 to 3 kiddos per case. And each volunteer serves at least one, if not two cases.
Could they have siblings? I mean, if little Johnny has a sister who's obviously in the same boat that Johnny is, will the volunteer have more than... take both of them?
Sure. We call that a case. So we try to keep our sibling units together in one case, and the volunteer serves both kiddos.
Now, will the volunteer be in contact with the foster parents pretty well?
Absolutely. That's our hope.
Does the foster parent and the actual parent, are they on good terms with CASA, or do they look at you guys as maybe, hey, butt out?
I think probably initially the presence of the CASA can be...
intimidating?
Maybe to the parent, to the bio parent. We call them bio parents, simply because we report directly back to the court. Sometimes, depending on how many kiddos are in a foster placement, the foster parent is responsible for all of the different appointments, so forth, that, you know, the kiddos are going to and have to attend. So sometimes I think while the CASA is definitely advocating for the best interests of the kiddo, when the foster parents oftentimes already have very full households, the CASA is one more person for the foster parent to have to manage. Our foster parents in Marion County have really embraced the role of CASA, and we're really appreciative for their willingness to accept us and welcome us into helping to advocate for the child.
How long has CASA been around?
Well, CASA was actually, the idea of CASA was actually born here in the Pacific Northwest in 1977 in Seattle. So Judge David Suk Coop, who was a juvenile court judge, felt really uncomfortable making these life-altering decisions for kiddos that would come before him in his courtroom and their cases, because he didn't feel that he had the time to really understand everything that was involved in that child's life and that child's case. So he had the idea that if he could train some community members on what he was looking for and what information would be helpful for him as a judge to make decisions, then he would feel more confident in the decisions that he was making, having this extra information. And so that's how CASA came to be in 1977.
And then how did it get established down here in the Willamette Valley?
It just organically grew throughout the country in different communities.
So it's nationwide?
It's a nationwide program now, absolutely. And so here in Oregon, programs and communities communities, as they learned about the CASA model, really embraced that, and community members and organizations came together to start the organization here in Salem, in Marion County. And that initial group came together in 2002. I believe it was 2002. Now I'm testing my history. But in 2005, we were granted our own nonprofit, independent nonprofit status as CASA of Marion County. Here we are.
How are you funded?
It's a combination. We get a very small sliver of our budget from the state every biennium. And then we also, the remainder of our budget is made up of grants and fundraising events and donations.
Let's just say for grins here that I decide I want to become a volunteer. Mm-hmm. What are the qualifications you're going to have, whether or not I'm going to get in, and what kind of training am I going to get?
Sure. So our qualifications are you have to be a minimum of 21 years old, be able to pass a pretty intensive criminal history background check, references, and then complete our required training curriculum.
Which is what?
So we do, you go through that initial screening process, which also includes a pretty intensive interview with two of our staff. Then you go through a curriculum, and it's about 35 hours of training. And that 35 hours is made up of about 15 hours of online training, about 16 to 17 hours of in-person training, and then a variety of different core observations that we require our CASAs to go through.
Why does that not seem like it's very much training for the volunteer who's going to be making decisions involving these children and their lives?
So the CASA model and standards that are given to us by the National CASA Association require us to have a staff, a paid full-time staff person for every 35 cases. So our volunteers are in regular communication and working in tandem with a trained staff, full-time staff person, to help them really do that case management work and write those court reports and really strategize about maybe different recommendations that the CASA might make regarding the kiddos, and maybe different questions to ask, different people to interview, what records to ask for. So it's really a partnership.
So you have basically your volunteers, and then you have a paid staff, correct?
We have to have one paid staff person for every 35 cases that we carry.
So what's that averaging for every volunteer? About every 15 volunteers, somewhere around there?
About every, I want to say 35, because most volunteers, between 30 to 35, most volunteers carry a single case.
And how long does all this training take?
So we do one training every quarter, and from beginning to end takes about 6 to 7 weeks.
And the full-time folks are working 40 hours a week, obviously.
Yes.
What are your volunteers working? What kind of a week do they put in?
So we say on average it takes about 8 to 10 hours per month.
That's all?
On average, you know, you see the kiddo minimum of once a month, and then you're reviewing a variety of records and having, you know, maybe different phone conversations, maybe visiting a teacher or two. But our hearings are every 3 to 4 months.
What are the volunteers looking for when they're talking to little Johnny and they're listening to whatever he's saying at 8 years old? He's telling people what he's thinking at 8 years old. What are they looking for?
First and foremost, we want our kids to be safe, and we want them to find a home that's going to be, whether that's going back to their bio parents or, you know, we need to look at other alternatives, but we want them to thrive. And so really getting to know the kiddo and what does the kiddo really want? What's appropriate for the kiddo? And what can we do as a CASA to advocate for little Joey to have a really full, safe childhood where he can thrive?
We need to take a short break. When we come back, more with today's special guest. You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on 104.3 FM and 1220 AM KSLM. Today's guest is Shaney Starr, who is the executive director from CASA. Back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. We're getting warmed up.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
Mm-hmm.
We're back in 5, 4, cue Terry. 2, 1, you're on.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
Welcome back to the Terry Saul Weekend Show. We are talking today with the executive director from CASA, Shani Starr. And again, what is CASA?
CASA stands for Court Appointed Special Advocates, and we are the voice for children in foster care as they navigate the court system.
Real quickly, we touched on this a little bit earlier. How does the volunteer help the child?
So the volunteer's main goal is to advocate for what they believe to be in the child's best interest based on all of the information that they've gathered, as well as interviews with all the pertinent people that are involved in the child's life, to include the child themselves.
If the child wants to talk to the volunteer, are they available 24/7?
Pretty much.
Really?
Yes.
And maybe the child is not comfortable at the foster home? Does that come up, that maybe they're just not comfortable there either and they
want to
talk?
Yeah, we've had that come up before. Oftentimes, you know, the kiddos will reach out to the CASA because the CASA is the one consistent in the child's life. Caseworkers change a lot within our child welfare system. Oftentimes,
Why is that? Because of the load?
Yeah. The work is really hard. The subject matter is tough. And then you have the workload on top of that. And I think it's a lot for a person to handle. It's not for everyone. There's oftentimes, you know, some frequent turnover in our cases. The reality is that we don't have enough foster homes for our kids here in Marion County. So kiddos are moved around a lot. And so their foster home changes, their caseworker changes, the CASA is their one consistent.
Why do they move around a lot? If they're already in a foster home, why are we going to go in there and upset them and move them to someplace else? Or why can't they just stay where they're at?
Well, ideally, we want them to stay where they're at. When we don't have enough foster homes, sometimes kiddo might be in a home as an emergency placement until they can line up a more appropriate placement. Many of our kiddos, sadly and heartbreakingly so, have a lot of behavioral issues. Sometimes they are behaviors that a foster home just is not in a position to manage. So they might need to be moved. There might be, you know, other kids in the home that aren't a good mix. There could be behaviors that just aren't manageable with that certain home, and it just, maybe they don't connect. It's really traumatic for a child to be removed from their parents, regardless of what was going on in the home to cause the removal.
Right.
So there's a lot of trauma and unresolved feelings and emotions that the kiddos have to work through and manage. And sometimes that manifests itself in some behaviors.
How much tugging of the heart is involved in your job?
A lot. There are days that are really hard.
Do you ever just go home and you just want to shut the door and put your head in the pillow and cry?
Every day. Makes me tear up now just thinking about it. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough.
So the goal in the volunteer is to really, the ultimate goal is to put them back in their home, right?
Right. And, the thing that we have to remember is that the best place for kids is in their family of origin. With the family that they were born into.
But not necessarily that's the best place.
Emotionally, connection, you know, bonding, development from that perspective. So that's really one of the goals of the CASA, is to make recommendations and suggestions on things that the parents can do to get to a place where we can safely return the kiddos. Because no matter what, kids love their parents, and we want our kids to be with their parents. It might not be the situation that we would, you know, living situation that we would have our kids raised in. But the reality is, kids being separated from their parents longer than what is appropriate, when it is safe to return our kids home, that's the best place for them to be.
How hard is it when you go visit little Johnny and Julie there, and they're 7, 8, 9 years old, whatever, and they're looking at you saying, "I just want to go home." And you know that it's not time yet. They're not ready yet. Right. But they're giving you those eyeballs.
The sad
"I just want to go home."
And
you have to say no and then walk away?
I don't know the saying no. You know, it's, we know and we want you to go home too. And so we're going to work really hard to make it safe for you to go home because we want you to be safe and healthy. And so, we're working really hard as well to help make everyone ready to come back together. So I don't ever want to tell a child no if there's the opportunity for us to make progress and to make everyone healthy again so they can be together.
So you let them know that we're working on it, man. We're going to try to get you home as quickly as we can. We're working on it.
Doesn't mean tomorrow. Right. Might not mean next month. And I think honesty with children is the, most of the time is the best policy, as long as they can understand what you're saying. Saying that everything, you're going to go home, over-promising and under-delivering is definitely not good. But I think there's ways you can have an age-appropriate conversation with children to let them know that...
I'm trying to figure out how to have an age-appropriate conversation with my 4-year-old granddaughter. And so far, it's not working. Grandpa, let's go get ice cream. Okay.
Yeah. So, it's... those are tough conversations, and that's why the relationship is so important between our volunteers and our staff. So we can have, we can role-play those conversations. We can strategize what that might look like, really trying to create appropriate expectations and appropriate timelines so we don't keep letting our kids down.
Do you ever have biological parents that say, you know what, little Johnny and Judy are out of the house? I hate to say it, but you guys keep them. I mean, and now you're looking at it and going, what are you saying? What are you thinking?
I don't think it's ever the intention.
And it could be because they don't feel they're ready yet.
Maybe they're not in the right place and in a healthy place. And
right.
We've had parents that have asked for help. Not right now. I need more help.
We need to take a short break. When we come back, more with today's special guest, Shaney Starr, who is the executive director of CASA. And when we come back, we'll continue with our conversation. Stick around.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler. Back in 5, 4, Q-Terry, 2, 1, you're on. You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
We are back. This is the Terry Saul Weekend Show on Salem's original radio station, KSLM AM and FM. I am your host, and today our special guest is the executive director of the CASA. Is it Foundation or just CASA?
CASA of Marion County.
CASA of Marion County. Shaney Starr. We've been talking about this CASA. It's a very interesting organization there. What did you do before you did this?
I've spent a majority of my professional working career in some various form of working in nonprofits. So I've been an executive director, fundraising, development, membership.
But you never had to work with children before like you're doing now, did you?
No.
And this is tough.
It is.
Isn't it rewarding, though?
I often tell people it's the hardest job I've ever loved more than anything.
Really?
Yeah.
What is the age group, the age group for these kids?
So we serve kiddos 0 to 18. When a kiddo in care hits 18, everything for them becomes voluntary. In terms of accessing services, they're a legal adult. They are able to keep their case open until they're 21. And so we've had CASAs that have served kiddos until they're 21. But we can be appointed at birth if a child is removed at birth all the way up.
Does that happen?
It does.
Really?
It does, yeah, sadly.
I don't understand it, I guess. I just don't understand it.
I would say that addiction is a really, it's a disease, and it's tough on families, as is mental health issues that aren't managed can also be a big struggle as well.
Your volunteers, what you call them, needs to investigate a case. How do they do that?
Well, we have a court order that appoints our program and the CASA as a legal party to the case. And then they have a letter that I sign designating them and assigning them to the case that allows them to, as a legal party, they can access a variety of different records. They can interview family members, school officials, healthcare providers, mental health providers, and anyone else who might be involved in the child's life that can give insight and might be knowledgeable about the child's history, about the child themselves. They also review all of those applicable records that pertain to the child's school, health, medical, you know, case records from DHS, really anything involving the child.
Who contacts you? Who decides whether or not little Johnny needs to be involved with CASA? Could a neighbor do that who doesn't like the way that the neighbor's raising their children? Who contacts you to get this thing going?
So if anyone suspects child abuse, we encourage them to report that abuse to the child abuse hotline, and I can give you that number a little bit later. We typically, as CASA, do not come into the picture until after the child's been removed from the home and the court appoints us to the case at what we call a shelter hearing. Within 24 hours or the next court day, technically the next court day, DHS has to come before the court after they've removed a child and make the case for why they removed a child. And that's if the court grants DHS temporary custody of the child, that's when the court appoints us to the case. Anyone can request a CASA for a kiddo who's currently in foster care.
When you said if you suspect child abuse, there are several different forms of abuse, are there not?
There are.
It's not just physical abuse. There's other abuse, correct?
Sure. There's neglect, which is actually a form of child abuse. There's physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional, mental abuse. So there's a variety of different categories, if you will, that abuse falls under.
How does the role of a CASA volunteer differ from that of an attorney?
We talked a little bit earlier about how the attorney ethically is required to advocate for what their client wants. So if the child wants to go home, that is what, and if they're at an age where they can understand what is happening, the attorney must, that's what the attorney is ethically required to ask for. The CASA's role is to advocate for what's in the best interest of the child. That might be, you know, where we disagree with DHS and we say we think the child is ready, you know, we think everybody's ready to be reunited. Or we might say, you know what, not yet. We think we need a few more months of parenting classes, or we need a few more months of treatment, or we need a few more months of anger management. We have advocated for reunification many times. We've advocated for increased visits so our families can be reunited. We've also advocated that we don't think it's right to reunite the child with the parents. So we recommend everything from one end of the spectrum to the other.
And you have the authority
to make those recommendations, yes.
Really? And will the court back you up on those?
I know that the court, they have a big job ahead of them. They do seriously consider the recommendations that the CASA makes in their court report. Sometimes, you know, the courts are required to follow law. Sometimes our recommendations, you know, our emotion and our, I don't want to say emotion, but sometimes...
Well, that's got to play a big part.
It does play a big part in it, and I'm kind of stumbling here, but we might have a gut feeling about something and want to wait a little bit longer, and that isn't necessarily what the law says we can do. So sometimes...
So if you have this gut feeling that you don't think little Billy's ready to go home then, and you tell them, do you need to say why I have this gut feeling, or can you just say, I just don't think it's right yet?
I mean, obviously it's... immensely helpful for us to be able to back that up right. with, you know, information or reasons why. But we can, you know, just say we don't think it's in the best interest of the child at this time, and we're okay with that.
How can they overrule you? Who can overrule
you? The judge.
The judge? Is he the only one that can overrule you? Mm-hmm. The parents, the biological parents can't overrule you, or the foster parents?
They can disagree with us, but the judge is the one.
And where does that go if they disagree? Nowhere?
It just can get entered into the record that they disagree with us, which happens a lot. You know, the attorneys disagree with us. We disagree with DHS. DHS disagrees with us. And the judge has the ultimate responsibility of taking all of that information that's been presented and making the decision.
Who's your pain in the rear? Is it the judge? Is it the attorney? Is it the biological parents? Is it the foster parents? Is it who is it that's like, here we go again?
You know, I would say this: we're all a part of this system. Attorneys, caseworkers, CASA, DHS, the community, we are all a part of this system. So when you hear us talk about the system, we are all the system. And we have a child welfare system in Oregon that has made a lot of changes and progress over the last couple of years, but we still have a long ways to go. We need more foster parents. We need more CASAs. Funding is always an issue. So when you say what's our biggest obstacle, it is the system as a whole. And that's not pointing fingers at any one section of the system or one part of the system. Our courts need more funding so we can have more treatment courts. We can have more judges. You know, we need more attorneys so their caseloads are not as heavy. We need more funding and more caseworkers because of our numbers of kids in care. We need to spend more money on prevention work. We need to put our resources into preventing the issues that are causing our kids to be removed from the home. Do I want funding for our program? Absolutely. But if we don't start funding the prevention, we're never going to make any headway in this child welfare system or the foster care system. So we need more volunteers to be CASAs. We need more foster parents to step forward. We need people to quit pointing the finger at each other and figure out how to work together the best that we can, because there's not one person that you go to that's involved in the system that wouldn't tell you, we want our kids to be safe, we want them to be happy, and we want them to be thriving. If we can put a man on the moon, we should be able to figure out how to make that happen.
All right. On our next segment, we'll talk a little bit about how we can get in touch with you, because you do need volunteers. You do need some help in there. With our final minute and a half that we had to go on this particular segment, let's talk a little bit about the homeless. There's a lot of children that are homeless. Now, can you, if you spot somebody or a family that's living on the street, can you get in there and grab that child and get them out of that situation?
No, that's...
I don't mean physically, you know what I'm saying. But, I mean, can CASA say, hey, we've got a homeless family here with two small children. We need to get those children out of there.
So what I would say is if you have concerns about the safety and the well-being of a child, by all means, anyone can make a report to the Child Abuse Hotline, and that number is 855-503-7233. And it's up to, that really puts it on to the professionals to make the determination if a child needs to be removed from their home.
Okay, so but again,
we can make an assumption about somebody's circumstances.
Right,
but
if they don't have a home, if they're living on the corner.
Yeah, that's not my decision to make. That is the responsibility of our child welfare system to determine if a child is in danger or their needs are not being met. That's not my job.
So is there emergency foster parents that can get that phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning and say, hey, we just found this family on the corner here. We need to take these kids out of here. They're freezing.
If it has been, if a child or children have been removed from their home, and they have the appropriate court orders to remove a child from their home in an emergency situation, yes, an emergency placement can receive a call at 3 o'clock
in
the morning.
And then you'll get involved at that point?
We would get involved when it goes before the judge the next day.
Okay. We need to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We're just getting warmed up on today's show, brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler and the Lule Group, Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule, State Farm Insurance. Back in just a moment.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler. Listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
We are back with our final few minutes of today's show. Our guest has been Shani Starr, the executive director from the CASA, which is the Court-Appointed Special Advocates. Did I get that right?
Well done, Terry.
Well, it only took me 45 minutes of talking to you to figure out what I'm saying here. We want to get into a few more things. We only have about 9 minutes left to go in today's show there. What are some of the key outcomes for the CASA model?
So we know that when a child has a CASA volunteer assigned to their case, we know that they're half as likely to reenter the foster care system. They spend less time, on average, 4 to 6 months, less time in foster care than if they didn't have a CASA.
What is the average time in foster care? Can it average from any?
So we ask our volunteers to make a 2-year commitment.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. Ideally, our cases wouldn't go that long, but what we ask
all
our
right.
volunteers.
Sorry to interrupt you. Go
no,
ahead.
That's okay. We know that when a kiddo has a CASA, that there are more services that are recommended for them to help them heal from their traumas. We also know that children with CASA volunteers do better in school. They have better attendance. They have better grades, tend to pass more of their courses. We also know that they're typically going to have better behaviors in school. And we know that, you know, like I mentioned, they spend less time in foster care and they are more likely to develop a plan of permanency. So does that mean guardianship? Does that mean adoption? So their permanency just is more likely to be established.
Have any of your CASA children gone through the system? Now they're big time adults and now they want to come see you again and say, you know what? You guys help me. I want to help you. Help somebody else. Does that ever happen?
It did. I was fortunate.
Talk about tugging at the heart.
Oh my gosh! Yes.
I'm going to get you to tears yet today.
we had one volunteer who had a CASA. She had a CASA and her sister didn't, and she credits the fact that she had a CASA with her success and her ability to be able to come back and volunteer as a CASA herself. And what I loved about this particular story with this volunteer was she was advocating and was assigned to advocate for kiddos, but she was also the biggest cheerleader for the bio mom. And it was this particular, see, you are going to get me to tear up, Terry. It was this particular CASA that advocated for more visits and longer visits.
With the biological parents?
With the kiddos, between the biological parents and the kiddos. Okay. And her reasoning was, if you want to reunite these kids with their mom, you have got to give the mom the chance to start rebuilding those relationships and building those bonds. And so she advocated not only for the kiddos, but she also advocated for the mom to get more visitation time. And she tells the story of when she was in the lobby in court one day, waiting for court to start, the bio mom grabbed her and said to someone, "Look, this is my CASA. This is my CASA." And that warms my heart, because that tells me that we're doing something right when we not only have our CASAs advocating for our kiddos, but we have our CASAs advocating for families to be families again.
Do you ever have bio parents come back to you and say, "You know what? You helped me get my act together, and now we're a happy family, and we're doing just great, and thank you."
We have. And we have people that had challenges earlier in life that have come back now and said, "I want to be a CASA." And
how does that make you feel?
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you realize what you're doing was right.
And we tell our volunteers frequently that you may not see the end result of the work that you're doing now, but please know that in a year, 10 years, 15 years, the impact of what you're doing today will be realized. We have a judge in Multnomah County that had a CASA, and her CASA is the one person who showed up at her high school graduation, at her college graduation, at her law school graduation, and showed up when she got sworn in as a judge in Multnomah County.
Really?
And that is the testament to the impact and relationship that a CASA can develop with their kiddos.
So it's not just at the time when we're done, and there could be lifelong friendship develop. Maybe friendship's not really the word, but it's just a relationship.
Absolutely. We've had CASAs that have been the one to teach their kiddos how to shave. They've been the one to teach their kiddos how to budget, help them open a bank account, get their driver's permit.
Wow.
So people don't realize the opportunity that lies in helping a kiddo on something so minor, really, to us is getting your driver's permit. But the fact that there might not be anybody else around to help that kiddo do that. And that's the impact that a CASA can have.
We only have a couple minutes left here, and I wanted to get some information out there. So what are you doing about 10 o'clock on April the 3rd?
So
you hanging out anywhere?
Yes, we're going to be hanging out on the steps of the Oregon State Capitol.
Now, what are you going to be doing there?
We are, April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, and so at 10 o'clock, we'll be hosting a kickoff rally to kick off our Child Abuse Prevention Month activities. And we partner with, it's not just CASA of Marion County, it's Family Building Blocks, it's Liberty House, it's Boys and Girls Club, the YMCA. It's worth it to come watch the kiddos sing You Are My Sunshine. The preschoolers singing You Are My Sunshine from the YMCA. It's the best ever. We have some guest speakers that come and share with us and really motivate us to take action in preventing child abuse in our community.
Okay, and that's obviously free. And you want everyone to come on down there and be a part of it.
Yes.
Again, that's happening on April the 3rd at 10 o'clock at the Oregon State Capitol on the steps there. And with our final minute or so we have left here, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, Shaney, what's the best way to do it and get some more information about becoming a CASA volunteer?
So you can call our office. It's 503-967-6420. Anyone who picks up the phone can answer your questions on what it takes to become a CASA. You can visit our website at CASAMarionOR.org. It has a link to fill out our application, has frequently asked questions, and that will get you started on the process to becoming a CASA.
All right. Shaney, would you do me a favor? Would you come back again? I've got 1,000 more questions I can ask you in this, 1 hour that we have here. Just didn't cover half of the stuff I wanted to talk about. But if you get a chance, can you come back and
Absolutely.
Join us again?
Absolutely. Would love to come back.
And again, that child abuse rally, which kicks off on April the 3rd at 10 a.m. down at the Capitol there. And real quickly, what is the child abuse hotline? You gave that number earlier.
Sure.
And can you give it to me
child
again?
Child abuse hotline number to report any suspicions of child abuse is 1-855-503-SAFE. That's 1-855-503-SAFE or 7233.
Okay. And do you have a an email address if somebody wanted to email you, they could?
Yes, absolutely. It's info@casamarianor.org. There's also a contact us form on our website.
Okay, great. Shani, thank you.
Thank you.
Can you come back and join us again sometime?
Absolutely.
All righty.
Thank you.
We are just about out of time for today's show. Remember, you can catch our show every Saturday at 10 a.m. and a replay Sundays at 11 a.m. here on Salem's original radio station, KSLM. A reminder, if you missed any of today's show or would like to hear any of my shows, you can always hear a podcast on our official KSLM website at www.kslm.news or on my official website at www.terrysaul.com. If you would like to drop me a note, I would love to hear from you. My email address is terry@kslm.news. We'll see you next time. Take care and be safe.
You've been listening to The Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM and 1220 AM KSLM. Today's show is brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler. The next time you plan an event, think of the Queen. And by the Lule Group, featuring Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Holmes, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance. That's a wrap. Thanks, everybody. Good show.
Bye, everybody.